This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hi, I'm Father Daniel Duplantis. In the 20th century, a new movement from the Far East captured the Western mind. Since then, the intersection of Christianity and martial arts has generated both conflict and harmony. In between, there remains many gray areas. In my new book, Jesus in the Dojo, I combine timeless theology with modern catechesis to provide a clearer path of reconciliation between the Christian faith and the practice of martial arts. You can find my book, Jesus in the Dojo, available now at most booksellers.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to A Catholic's Perspective, the podcast all about being a young Catholic surviving in a secular world. Today, I have a very special guest. We have Father Sam. He is the director of vocations in the Diocese of Broken Bay in the New South Wales, and is also a director of Joseph House, which is basically, I believe it's a discernment house for young men who are trying to discover God's will and vocation for their life, whether that's marriage, priesthood, or a mission. You can find Father on Instagram, TikTok, or YouTube at Father Sam French, which is FR Sam French, or you can listen to his homily podcast, The Average Shepherd, on Spotify, Apple, or other places. So I am very happy to welcome Father Sam. Welcome, Father Sam.
Thank you so much, Amber. It is a pleasure and a privilege to be here. Yeah.
Thank you so much. So we were talking a little bit before this, and you said that this is the first podcast you're doing as an ordained priest.
Absolutely. So it's I have no idea what to expect. I'm not sure if I'm prepared or not prepared enough or what's happening, but I'm very pleased to be here and I'm excited.
Wonderful. I'm sure you'll do fine. Like, all of this is like right up your alley, because I've been following you on Instagram for quite a while. Your reels are hilarious. And I'm sure your brother John, right? He helps with you with a few of them, but they are so funny.
It's to be honest, it's been the most wild kind of journey of all time, because it was not intentional at all on my part for it to look like how it looks now. It's in fact, if you typed in my name maybe a year ago, the only article you would find from Sam French was when I was a seminarian. And it was about my anti-social media kind of pirate. So I spoke about the dangers of social media and how to kind of detox from it and get off it. And it was only with this the World Youth Day in Portugal that my bishop assigned me to the high school bus. And I was like, how do I relate to Gen Z, or Gen Z, as we say in Australia? How do I relate to them? And it's like, oh, well, they're all on social media. Maybe I'll try something. And so I made a few reels basically just to relate, and it just exploded from there. And now it's just beyond my control.
Oh my gosh, look where you are today. No, that's fantastic. I think it's crazy because social media does play such a huge role in newer generations' lives. I mean, every single kid I know now has like a smartphone or an iPad. And I'm like, there definitely needs to be a balance of, you know, how much we're allowing ourselves to be on social media. And kids don't really know that balance. Even teenagers don't. Actually, adults, nobody knows the balance.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's really difficult. So I think it's good to have that idea of like, you need to have a healthy relationship with social media. But it's like, yeah, how else do you connect with the younger people if you don't have a social media?
Exactly. It's a bit of a catch-22, I think, because it's really hard to navigate that space. And you are absolutely correct in naming that really strong boundaries are required for social media. Otherwise, it can become an all-consuming entity in a person's life. And it can have, you know, terrible, terrible effects on the lives of people. And so I think it's one of those things, and it's a relatively new phenomenon in society in general. It really only took off around 2010. And it's something that is very new. We don't quite understand exactly the effect that it's having, but I think there's a lot of evidence starting to emerge about the effects of social media. So I think, creating a culture of strong boundaries around it is absolutely essential. And I found that in my own life. When I first started, I kind of went in very naive. I started posting things and then I just started, and when the channel began to grow or the page began to grow, especially on Instagram and TikTok, I was just getting hundreds and hundreds of comments a day. And a lot of them, depending on the subject matter of the video, a lot of them were just vitriolic kind of hatred, anti-Catholic, smears against priesthood and all the rest of it. And because I didn't have any sense of the danger of what I was walking into, it was really starting to affect me. I could feel it really have an impact on my spiritual life and take away my peace. So that was something I learned very early on. And fortunately, I've spoken to spiritual director about and other people about creating very solid boundaries around that. And speaking to other priests who have used social media before, Father Rob Galea, he's very, very popular in Australia. He's also an international speaker. I spoke to him and he gave me some just great advice about the way of just methods of dealing with social media and having very clear and set boundaries around it.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with what you said. Also, because it's like you said, if you're not prepared and you don't know the dangers, then you open yourself up to those attacks, which a lot of times I would definitely claim that some of them are demonic attacks, because I don't think it's possible to be that hateful without, some kind of demonic something. I don't know, take that with what you will, but I do feel like some of it has to be diabolical.
Yeah. No, I absolutely agree.
And I definitely, with everything going on, like you can't escape it either. People always feel opinionated. We have that whole thing going on where it's like a main character syndrome where everybody has to put themselves in another person's perspective. They're like, oh, this is about me. It's a personal attack. And it's insane. I just gave a talk a few days ago at the University of Wisconsin about social media because there's a lot of people that don't understand those dangers. And now there's like those studies coming out about how the radiation from the phone affects you. Study about like the phone neck where like kids are literally having posture problems because their head is forward so much looking at their phones, which is causing like nerves to be pinched, which is causing less oxygen and blood flow to the brain, which can cause issues. There's just so many issues going on and nobody knew about this. Are you a millennial?
I am. Yeah. Okay. 1992.
Okay, I'm 1999, so we got a little bit of an age gap, but it's not that big. Yeah. And so it's like, but when I was a kid, I'm sure when you were a kid and phones were just becoming a thing, the internet was just becoming a thing, basically, nobody knew about the dangers. And I think one of the main dangers is what our topic is about, like the cultural trends and how those trends are leading young people away from the gospel and how too much of something isn't good, especially social media, because I know really, really strong, faithful Catholics who were so strong when I was a kid and like they were in a strong Catholic family. As soon as they got a phone, now they're atheist. Mm. Now they're agnostic. Yep. Yep. Too much information at their fingertips.
Yeah, no, I absolutely, I agree with it. It's such a false, a multifaceted situation that we're dealing with. And I think We're waking up to now. I had never heard about the radiation stuff or the neck issues. One thing I have been paying very close attention to is an author, Jonathan Haidt. He's not Christian. He calls himself a psychologist in the area of evolutionary ethics or something like that. So it's obviously something that you've just got to be a little bit careful with. But he's been doing huge studies on the psychological impacts of the observed psychological impact of social media ever since 2010, particularly among Gen Z and millennials. So we might we could speak about that in a little bit. But I think what you're describing as a broader cultural phenomenon is really important to understand, because I think I don't think social media is itself the issue. I think social media is like a microphone that amplifies undercurrents that are already existing within society. And I think one of the biggest things that has been observed in recent, not just decades, really centuries, since like the 18th century, has been what a lot of philosophers call like the inward turn, this this movement away of seeing oneself and one's identity completely within oneself. You know, this preoccupation with our own emotions, with our own well-being, our own, I think, is it main character syndrome?
Yeah.
Is that, yeah. So I think that's actually a perfect brand to describe what has been, you know, very articulately put on paper by these philosophers talking about the inward turn and expressive individualism. Main character syndrome just captures it because it's this idea that we've just become the center of importance. And we have to recognize that's not how human beings have thought pretty much ever until the last few centuries. In there's a book called The Rise and Triumph of the Modern Self by Carl Truman. He's a, I think he might be a Presbyterian theologian, but he doesn't get into really theology. It's more sociology. But he talks about there was a time where if you were to introduce yourself or someone was to say, you know, who are you, Sam? I would say, like, I am Sam from the family of French. I'm the son of a blacksmith of this region. And you know, and I'm a Catholic. Well, everyone was probably Catholic in the Western world at that stage. But there was this sense in which my identity came from where I was situated within my community and within the broader framework of society and faith. And that was where I drew my identity. Whereas today, it's very much the opposite. It's kind of I'm the main character. Everything that's important to me is about my own emotions, my own, you know, whatever I deem to be important. So it's this almost a domineering individualism where we're almost locked within ourselves and find it increasingly incapable of looking outwards to our community, to our church community, our family, our friends, and particularly to those in need. So that's something that has been tracked, you know, these last several decades in particular. And I think that mentality has just been amplified by social media. So I think we've got to be really careful acknowledging that and understanding that that is it's a real human trend and how to kind of navigate that, especially within the context of faith.
That's so fascinating because, you know, thinking back on that, I always thought about like, oh, it was so interesting how people used to talk back in the old days and how different it is today with like abbreviating everything and stuff. As before, like there was such a beautiful elegance to the language, you know, where I was just reading like Jane Eyre and some other books and some of the language they use, I was like, why don't we use those words today? But the same thing goes for, you know, back to the whole like, oh, I came from so and so and so. We lost so much elegance and so much importance, I feel like. And when we're individuals, I feel like we cut ourselves off from something that's so important. And I'm sure you're on Twitter and you see the insanity that is Twitter.
That's the one platform I'm technically on, but I don't really engage with. I think I'm too fragile at this point in time to be able to take on just another assault.
It's a lot. And honestly, I feel like sometimes I'm like, why am I on this platform? All I do is get dragged through the mud. And yet it's interesting because at the same time on Twitter is really the only place where I see Catholics against Catholics. I see so many Catholics that are just pitting each other and taking their words out of context and twisting things they're saying. And so it's interesting to see how different social media platforms affect people differently. Because on Instagram, I feel like it's more of a feminine vibe, where not that it's like all girls are on there, but in the sense of like, you know, you post a photo and you're like, oh my gosh, like this is so cool. Or I don't know. Whenever I see photos on Instagram, usually it's my girlfriends, or if it's reels, it's usually guys. And I just think it's interesting how different social media platforms have different personalities and how that can affect us. Because it's like you could be one way on Instagram and then you could be a complete other way on Twitter and then another way on like Facebook. I don't know. But I feel like we all put up like this facade. It becomes like, oh yeah, on social media, I'm this way. But if you met me in person, like I'm completely different. And I think that's another thing is we're losing our personalities almost, because you see on social media like cottagecore or trad wife or gothcore, I don't know, all these different cores. And now all of a sudden everyone's trying to copy each other because they want to be the latest trend. They want to be this, and they're losing their individual personality because of it, because they want to look a certain way or follow a certain trend. And so in a way we're all becoming like, you know, cookie cutter in a way. And I've noticed that a lot as well, where it's like, you know, on social media, because you can't see the person behind the phone, there's also a dehumanizing sense to it as well, I guess. I know that was a lot of everything, but...
No, I think you're absolutely onto something, Amber. Like there's something going on with identity at the moment and self-understanding, and it's being exacerbated by social media. And in fact, I think there are some problems that are completely novel that have arisen because of social media that simply couldn't exist before in any real sense. And I think I can't really comment on too much of the how the different platforms affect, because I'm really only active on Instagram and TikTok. And I see Instagram as kind of more community based, in the sense of the people who watch my content are those who largely agree with it. But there's some of the videos that break that boundary, kind of, you know, bring in others and they also bring the comments too. TikTok is kind of like it's less mature than Instagram for sure. So it's a younger audience, and it's a little bit more vitriolic. You know, people are more likely to have been just randomly dished up something from the algorithm and you know, take their time to comment negatively on there. But I think the broader thing of how it shapes identity, in that same book, The Rise and Triumph of the Modern Self. It sounds like I'm trying to advertise this book, but it's honestly one of the most kind of paradigm shifting things I've ever read. And he talks about how identity has completely flipped, in the sense of when we were kids, you know, you would go to school, you'd have your circle of friends, you'd come home and you would be with your parents, and you kind of understood who you were in the context of your family and your friendship circle. And the relationships that mattered to you were the ones that were immediate to you, the ones that you dealt with every day. What this guy Truman observes is what's happened in the last decade or so is, especially for Gen Z, because there's this whole world of social media and there's all of those influences and those cores that you're talking about and ways of belonging, people have started to primarily associate their identity with who they present online. And he said there's been a flip. Like when Facebook and stuff came out in 2007 and Instagram soon thereafter, there was a sense in which I was living my own life. I had my family, I had my parish, I had my friendship circle, and that was real life. And then social media was an expression of that life. So it's like, this is what I'm doing today, or this is how I'm sharing my own real life with the world around me. Mm. What's happened is that has flipped for so many people, where real life is their identity online and who they choose to present themselves with, because they have infinite creativity. They can be whoever they want to be online. They can be, as I said in an article I wrote a while ago, I am much better at writing than I am at speaking. And so I have an advantage online. Like, I can write something that makes me sound so much more eloquent. And so I can kind of present that side of my personality. When it comes to pictures, you know, you can, if you're taking a selfie, you can frame it so that you look way, you know, better than you naturally would. And so you have complete control over your online identity and how you present to the world. And because of that fact, so many young people, their principal identity is who they present online. And in some sense, their real relationships are performative. So when they go home, when they're speaking to their parents, they're playing a role, because they know the expectations that their parents have of them and what it means to kind of live in their own family. And they may not agree with it, but they kind of go home and they perform who they need to be at home, but they actually feel more comfortable with their online persona. And I'm thinking to myself, that's never happened in human history ever. And we really need to kind of tread carefully, because that has really big implications as to how we deal with theological things like the real presence and the fact that all of the sacraments are tangible and you know, for us to really engage with real communion. And there's this movement of the, you know, the metaverse and the virtual world, which is slowly creeping in and kind of taking over identity and consciousness. So we've got to be real quite careful about all of that.
Yeah, no, it's such a big issue nowadays. And like you said, this isn't anything we've ever really had to face before. We never had to face these, I mean, maybe some issues to an extent, if you came from like a bad family and you felt like you had to put on a persona, but there was no real escape from it. You kind of had to grow from it and get therapy maybe one day and learn from it. You didn't have an escape really. And when it comes, I definitely think it can be dangerous, because then we feel as though we're not as good as our online persona. It starts creating these mental health issues we're seeing today, and these identity crises that we're seeing today, where people don't know who they are. And when I first got my phone, I was probably around 13, I think, ish. And I knew who I was. I knew who my parents were. I knew that these were my friends and that's all I needed. But when I got my phone, it's all of a sudden I had to know what this person was thinking. I had to know what that person was posting. I had to feel like I could compare myself to them. So I had to feel like my life was as good as their life. And it started this comparison culture. And I wanted to compare myself to their life and figure out, how can I have what they have? Because they look like they have it all. And I didn't realize that that's a facade.
It's completely controlled, right? In the sense of we have infinite, you know, malleability online. We can change ourselves to look however we want. And there's a real temptation there to become somebody online who we're not. And I actually struggle with that a little bit, because you know, I'm a priest in a very little diocese north of Sydney. It's very small compared to a lot of the world. And it's a situation where I'm now going to these events. Like this week, in fact, Matt Fradd is in Australia, and there's a big event with him and Christopher West and Jason Evatt, and it's all happening in Sydney.
Wonderful.
I'm looking forward to it. And it's a but I start going to these events now whenever things are on, and all of these young people are recognizing me, and they're running up to me and they're saying, can I take a photo with you? It's so good to meet you in person. And there's this sense in which I'm very aware of this, but the character that I play, the priest that I play online is a character. And I don't mean, you know, like in terms of like the serious videos I do, that's definitely my perspective. And that's me being as honest as I can be. But all of the skits of, you know, me running around and blessing the house with Ghostbusters and the whole thing of, like, you know, purging the house of all of pagan influence and all of those things, like that, I'm deliberately playing an exaggerated character. And I think, and so what that does is people have it in their mind that I'm this crazy, like, outgoing priest, but, and you know, like I'm, you know, super charismatic in my personality. Now I'm acting like that in the video for the sake of creating engaging content, and we might talk about being missionary in that sense. But it's what I'm struggling with is when people run up to me, they're expecting to meet someone that I'm not, and I don't have control of that narrative all the time, and it can be quite jarring, because I almost feel as though, I need to start acting like the person I portrayed online. And it's like, well, that's not quite who I am. It's not my natural God-given temperament. And so there's a lot of questions around identity there that we've got to make sure that we're engaging with and giving requisite time in prayer to make sure that we're not becoming somebody that we're not, and we're not kind of becoming a performative character rather than being transparent. And, you know, as the Lord says, let your yes be your yes and your no being your no. I've always saw that as just be who God has made you to be, to, like, most authentically. Don't wear masks. Don't play characters. And so that's something that I currently struggle with a little bit. I don't have the answer to that question, but it's something that I'm just conscious of. And I think at least that's the first step of creating boundaries. It's just being conscious of the impact that social media has on other people and how we present ourselves.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I know exactly what you mean, because some people will, you know, recognize me as well. And I've had people try to hug me in the communion line during Mass, and I'm like, okay, this is not the time or place, like maybe afterwards. Things like that haven't happened yet. Yet. Well, I mean, you're probably doing Mass if you are. So if they ran up, that would be kind of awkward.
Yeah.
But it's like stuff like that'll happen. And part of me is afraid that, you know, if they meet me in person, I won't live up to their expectations of who I am online. And I think it's like a similar concept where it's not that, you know, I don't want to be like, I am who I am online. I definitely am the person I am online. The issue though is that I'm also a woman, and I also go through like cycles of emotion where some days I might be, you know, really, really happy to meet people. Other days I might be really, really tired, and I might try, but it might come off as me being like fake. And it kind of like goes through my day where I'm just like, did I sound fake? Was I being fake? Do they think I'm weird now? Do they not like me? I have been in like two situations, maybe more that I can actually think of, where I am just like, why did I say that? Why did I do that? Why did I, you know? And so it can really affect us because we think like, oh yeah, I'm being authentic or this or that. But they also have to understand that in a way it is, you know, it is a persona, because if we're trying to reach the younger generations with ministry and evangelism, we're going to use methods that they're going to be engaged with. And because the younger generations, and I'm talking about like my age and younger, because they have attention issues and they need like funny content, everything seems to be very heavy in their life right now. So they kind of latch on to the comedy and like the hopeful stuff. And so if we try to do that, they, like you said, they get attached to your personality, and then they meet you and maybe you're not the person you are online, and then they're disappointed, but that's not like your fault or anything. But it's like online ministry is very difficult to navigate because we want to do things that are going to engage the younger generations and the older generations, of course. But it's like, how do you do that while still being authentically yourself? It's something that we have to work out like every single day.
Yeah. Well, I think, Amber, like part of the antidote is podcasts like this, talking about the disparity and just naming it, just naming the fact that there is a difference between who we can be naturally 7 days of the week, and who the and what we look like as a curated individual online. You know, it's kind of just the online we're never going to promote our worst moments, and I think we just have to be very aware of that what happens online is only curated, and it's not real, it's not as real as real life. And I think so long as we continue to name that, people are not going to be as affected by that disparity. But I think if we try to uphold both, or we try to hold social media as the standard by which we need to live by, then we're just never going to live up to that expectation. And I think it just becomes crushing, and it causes all of this, it just causes so much anxiety. In fact, this guy, Jonathan Haidt, who he's got this study, which he's going to release in February, I think, of next year. And he's talked, and he's looking at, I've just got a piece of paper here. That's why I'm looking down. He's got all of these statistics that he's been measuring among Gen Z and millennials since 2010. And it's like, and he's looking at mental illness and diagnosed disorders, particularly anxiety, depression, ADHD, bipolar, anorexia, substance abuse and addiction, and schizophrenia. And this is really interesting, since 2010, this is when social media was mainstreamed, and the iPhone, I think the first one came out in 2009 around there. And so smartphones became mainstream. Since 2010, anxiety has seen an increase of 134%,
whoa,
depression 106%, ADHD 72%, bipolar 57%, anorexia 100%, substance abuse and addiction by 33%, and schizophrenia 67%. And it talks about you can actually track the different generations. So in terms of all of just anxiety alone, ages 18 to 25 139, whereas you go up to 26, my generation, it drops to 100. So 139% for Gen Z, for millennials, 103%, for 35 to 49, 52%, and ages 50 plus, those who are basically not affected by social media, an 8% decrease.
Wow.
And so it's this, there's these insane statistics that are coming out about mental health and anxiety in terms of tracking since 2010. And I think that this is all part and parcel of an avalanche of what's happening to human identity with all of by having like a virtual world enter into the mix. I think it was made so much worse by the unnamed virus that happened in 2019 and beyond. I just don't know what I'm about to say.
No, you can say whatever you want.
Well, and I think it's just, I think since then, you know, we went so virtual that all of this has kind of been increasing. And I think we have to name all of this stuff. We have to be aware of this stuff. But the whole other side of it is social media is not going away. It's there and young people are on it. And this is the question that I think you and I are often contending with, in the sense of if you want to evangelize, you have to be where young people are. And so, you know, years ago, I could, as a seminarian, it was very easy for me just to kind of to poo-poo like social media and say, oh, you know, don't worry about it. It's terrible for you. And that's all well and good when I'm a seminarian living in an enclosed community where all of my needs and community are fulfilled and met. But then when I come out into the world as an ordained minister and as a priest, I now have to care for souls. My job, my mission is to bring others into relationship with Jesus and for their salvation. And so it's like, well, I can just say, yes, social media is evil and it's creating all of these social issues. Therefore, don't go near it. Just stay away from it. It doesn't stop the fact that something like 98% of Gen Z are on social media in some capacity. And so it's like, okay, well, what do I do with that? I can either just completely ignore it and just say, well, you're on your own, ladies and gentlemen, or I can do something about it and be there. And you were saying, like, you know, there's the whole there's a growing nihilism in culture, the whole black pill thing. And I think I think the role of the church is to be a white pill, or to be the Christ pill, as I've heard kind of throwing out there. And since my social media started gaining traction, that became my mission. When people say, well, what do you do on social media? My go-to answer is I try to interrupt the doom scroll. You know, there's so many young people that are trapped, that are just consuming content mindlessly and unable to break free of that. It's a real addiction. They're consuming content. I want to just make something that's entertaining enough that it makes it onto their feed. But in that moment, it reminds them of Christ. It reminds them of the Lord. It reminds them of the church. It reminds them of the community of faith that is waiting for them. The whole point of it is just to point them in the direction of something that is real, to point them in the direction of something that is solid and has the potential for their salvation. And I think that's basically my entire mission on social media. And I said this to one guy who's like he's a bit more of an expert, and he said, "You realize you're having more effect than you know." And I said, "What do you mean?" And he says, "Well, if you create engaging comedic content, even if it's not very priestly, even if it's not very, it's not kind of commensurate with the you know, with the image of what a priest is supposed to be, you are creating a moment of engagement in the mind of a young person. And you've got, you know, I've got the million hashtags and everything attached to every video with Catholic, Christian, Saints, Holy, Mary, Rosary, like all of this, you know, salvific material. And so the algorithm's reading that and saying, oh, you're interested in something Christian, in something Catholic, here's something else. And then maybe one of your videos rolls over. It's something where just by creating something entertaining and funny has a further impact of bringing more God into this space. And so it's like, once I heard that, I was like, I was really thrilled, because I was like, oh, actually that's quite amazing. And I've seen extraordinary fruit from something that I thought was me just being ridiculous and kind of showing my funnier side. I cannot believe the impact that it's had on some people's lives in my DMs, but I can talk about that if you want me to.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's so beautiful too, because there's so much doom and gloom, I think, especially surrounding the Catholic Church nowadays. You know, whatever's going on with Pope Francis, whatever's going on with the cardinals, whatever's going on with the bishops, like the synodality thing, like there is so much uncertainty and people are confused and they're really hurting. And the issue that people don't understand is there are some creators out there who feed into this. And they kind of continue feeding this doomsday type idea. And they're constantly posting about the latest drama or the latest thing that just happened. And that can be really detrimental if that's the kind of content you're consuming, which is why I think, Father Sam, your content is so important. And we need more people to do that type of content, because people need to interrupt their doom scrolling, whether it's about the church or politics or anxiety, eating disorders, fitness, whatever, it could be a multitude of different things. But, you know, something I've noticed is with like Satanism, you know, upticking these days with people like Taylor Swift, Doja Cat, all these people, like so many satanic symbols and Sam Smith and it's like we need some good holy content, because truly the algorithms are pushing, you know, these satanic type of videos. And, you know, and they're pushing the youth away from Catholicism and what is good and holy and beautiful, and pushing them towards things that are ugly, satanic, and they make you feel awful. And you can really see a reflection in that, in the way that we, I guess you can see society and how they dress and they don't respect life and all of these things. You can see the impact of that. But yes, definitely tell us how people have been impacted in the DMs and stuff. Yeah, tell us about that.
Well, first, I want to affirm what you're saying. I think there is a lot of kind of satanic imagery and kind of impulse. But I mean, even like the theology of Satanism is not about the deification of Satan himself, in the sense of it's generally not about the worship of Satan, although there are those who certainly worship Satan. But it's generally about the elevation of the ego, which is a very easy sell in today's world, in the world of kind of individualism, where we're totally concerned about, you know, fulfilling our own sense of well-being and purpose and fulfilling our own desires. Selling satanic imagery is very easy, because Satanism is ultimately about the exaltation of the self.
And it's like Luciferian, right? Luciferianism.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind
of, yeah.
It's the exaltation of the ego. And that's so easy to sell, because we're fallen creatures. We want to give a complete power to our ego. That's literally the sin of Lucifer. And so I think it's important just to acknowledge that, because I see plenty of it out there, and I see a lot of that in the comments section as well. There are people who are obviously challenged by videos that I'll create, and they'll get into the comments and they'll say things that are quite explicit. But there is another side to it all, and that is how people have been responding positively, in the sense of I have stacks of DMs of people saying, your content brought me back to the faith. And I'm like, okay, which one? And it's like, oh, you're like the Ghostbusters house blessing video. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, and they say, well, it was something that was relatable, and it reminded me of the faith of my childhood. It was something where it just reminded me, and now I've started reading scripture again. I'm thinking to myself, what on earth is going on here? Like, how, for some people, they are so close. They are so close, and it takes one little thing to bring them into the fold, into the communion of the church. And I'm thinking, this is absolutely extraordinary. And the fruits of my silly little videos are so disproportionate to my effort that I'm putting in, that I'm thinking this has to be a work of the Holy Spirit, or the Holy Spirit is at least working through some of this. I'll go back to the, there was one thing that you said as well of division yes. in social media, and that is huge. And Satan definitely works through this. And I have one particular experience where I feel as though I was battling with this directly. One night, never read comments when you're tired or upset or
sad. I hear that.
So it was one night I was exhausted. It was a Sunday night, and I opened up my comments, and someone had written a lengthy DM, and it was about something that I had. It was a video, the one that I was addressing to the whole Bishop Strickland situation, trying to call us back to what are the saints saying? Not what the talking heads are saying on the internet, but what do the saints say, and how can we take a measured approach to the upset that we're feeling? And this person got into the comments and said, "I'm so upset by your video. I can only hope that what you've created is just is not what you truly believe, but just an expression of your cowardice. You know, why don't you like grow a backbone and actually, you know, do the job of a priest?" And I don't know what it is, but the word coward has always been like a something very upset. I've always found it to be one of the most savage insults to a man. Mm. And it was something where I read it, I was tired, and it just ripped me to shreds. And I thought to myself, like, I want to rip this guy apart in terms of like just writing the most savage response of all time. And I just sat there and I said, this is demonic. This is a spiritual attack that I'm experiencing right now, because I am completely, my response to this is far beyond proportion of what some random somewhere in the world has said in a private message. Right. And so I just put my phone to the side. I went to bed. I woke up the next day and I said, okay, I'm going to respond to this with all charity and no malice. And then I wrote this. I wrote this response about Saint Catherine of Siena and the way that she dealt with the Holy Father. She didn't call him out. She wrote a message to him. She wrote a letter to him in charity directly. You know, she didn't go around posting about the you know, the behavior of the Holy Father. She didn't go putting billboards up about, you know, how wrong he was. She went to him directly. And she expressed her concern, which all of us as Catholics are free to do. We can write to Rome. We can write to our bishops. We can speak to our spiritual director. And so I pointed that out, and I just spoke as charitably as I could. I kid you not, he wrote back a message where he said, "I can't believe that you've mentioned Saint Catherine of Siena. I grew up in that church. I was baptized there. My wife, me and my wife got married there. She's had such a profound impact on my life. You know, it's like," and then he said, "I think I was wrong in this. And you know, you're not a coward. In fact, I've thought wrong about this." And I thought, oh my goodness, this is not real. I think I'm still asleep and I think I'm still dreaming. Someone had a 180 turn just from being completely charitable. And it made me think to myself, if I gave in to my direct impulse, then I would have just been feeding into the division. I could have written this guy off and he would have said, "Oh, well, this random priest online, he's attacked me now, so I'm completely justified in everything that I've said." But just with a little bit of charity and swallowing my own pride and trying to reach out to this guy, he had a 180 flip, and I honestly couldn't believe it. It's one of the most heartening exchanges I've ever had on social media, and it started off as almost like a spiritual attack, but I could see just how the Holy Spirit brought goodness from it. And I was like, there are opportunities on social media that we have to be aware of, and people, their hearts can be changed through social media. It's not the be all and end all, but it can be a really good beginning for people.
That's so beautiful. And I think it's so true, because how many times are we faced with that situation on social media and we choose the impulse over the charity? Yeah. And I truly believe that, you know, a lot of these things God allows to test us, to make us grow in virtue, to choose the right thing, because the only way we can really grow in virtue is by practicing. You know, we need to control our will. We need to control our impulses. And the only way we're going to do that is through training. And so God allows these opportunities to arise in order to help us choose the right thing to do. And it might take a while. It took me a while. But then I came up with my, It takes forever. And I have my little catchphrase, which is haters will be prayed for. And something I tell people, though, is that it's like, don't tell them like on social media, like, I'm going to pray for you. Like, you need prayers. I can't believe you just said that to me. You need Jesus. It's like, don't do that. Don't go
that. That's
that
pride far. As well, right? That's pride as well, because it's an underhanded compliment.
Yes. And it's almost the worst kind, because you're bringing God into it, you know, like you're saying, oh, you're beyond help. Like, I don't know how to explain it, but you're almost using God as like a scapegoat or a cop out, where you're like, I'm going to pray for you. Yeah. And it's like, that's not a Christian thing to do. That's not something we should be doing. That's why I always tell people, never tell them you're praying for them, unless like specifically they ask and they're a friend. But if they're an enemy and you're just saying, I'm going to pray for you because you know it's going to piss them off, that's not a great look, nor is it. And I doubt those people who actually do that even pray for the person after they say it. Yeah. I mean, you know, and I've had moments like that when I was on TikTok and I was new to all of this. But as I grew in my faith, the one thing that I have learned is it's like, ignore the haters, pray for them in private. And respond to those who have positivity. There are a few situations where I had it kind of like you did, where somebody said something and I was like, oh my gosh, like, is this for real? Like, this guy is so, you know, just out of touch. He has no idea. He took all my words out of context or something. I breathe. I kind of respond like, hey, that's not what I meant. Like, this is actually what I meant. But I understand your perspective and I hope you have a good day. God bless. You know, I don't. Yeah. Get into it. And it's so crazy how manners, a little politeness can really shut somebody down. That's something I learned in high school too. When I was getting bullied and somebody would insult me, I'd be like, are you okay? And it wasn't even like I was genuinely like, are you okay? It was more like I genuinely was worried about that person, because nobody is this mean without a problem going on in their life, and it would shut them down instantly. They'd be like, they wouldn't know what to do. Or somebody would insult me and I'm like, oh, I really like your hair today. And it would be genuine, because I wouldn't say something unless I meant it, and it would shut them down. They wouldn't. Yeah. And I think that's so important, is that fighting fire with fire only creates more fire.
Yeah.
If you really want to put the flames out, use some holy water.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's so true, in the sense, like, I know early on, like, it felt, I would do things like that. I would try to be almost like snarky in my, in my responses. But exactly as you've described it, depending on the intention, where that's coming from, that can be taking God's name in vain. Like, that's serious, in the sense of, if you're using like a facade of faith invoking God in that way, that is a way of taking God's name in vain. So we've got to be really careful there. And I think it's one of those things where one of the good measures of knowing whether you're being charitable is that it'll often be an assault on your own ego, where you're not satisfying your ego. Because when you say like the snarky, I'll pray for you, there's that sense of, I feel like I've left this exchange with a victory. Whereas to very humbly just disagree with someone without asserting your own will is a bit of a death to the ego. And you walk away from that exchange, you're not having won in any tangible or emotional sense. And I think that's probably a good measure of knowing if you've acted charitably. And we can only hope that kind of bears fruit in our online exchanges. But it's so easy, and I've felt this temptation a lot, it's so easy to fight fire with fire. All of us want that. And in fact, the artisans of dissent, the artisans of division, I think monetize that. And that's really where there's danger. I mean, I realize even with my own platform on Instagram, I could come out and I could do really divisive stuff, and I know that I could have a huge audience very, very quickly, in the sense of, because it's appealing to base human desires. It's like everything, right? In terms of base sexuality or whatever, if you put something that is you know, that is indecent. If you put something that is an offense against purity online, you know, you've got models in bikinis and whatever else, it's going to drive massive kind of traffic to that page, because it's appealing to a base human desire. So so is division. It's calling upon avarice. It's not avarice. It's calling upon wrath. And it's drawing something out of us, and it's, and we can easily monetize that. It's about making sure that we're not feeding sin into the cycle, where, you know, social media is already replete with that. I did a post a while ago about how all of the different platforms, all of the most popular apps on the App Store are basically a mirror of the seven deadly sins, you know, like Uber Eats, gluttony, Tinder being lust, Twitter being wrath, and I went through, and Instagram being envy, in the sense of, you know, people have a better life than me, and you know, curating. So, and I went through, and it's crazy how you're like, oh my goodness, it's like that. Literally, the specialty of each of these platforms lines up with a particular base human desire, or one of the seven deadly sins. And it's like, well, we need to be, if we're going to be missionary disciples in that space, we need to bring something different. We need to bring holiness in there. And that means we have to be present, but we have to be aware of the dangers. And I think of Christian missionaries, Jesuits going out into the new world, discovering tribes and things. They wouldn't just sit back at home in Europe and not go anywhere. They would move in. They would learn the language. They would understand the culture, and then they would begin the process of baptizing the culture. And they would learn, well, what is evil, what is not commensurate with the gospel, and they would phase that out, and then they would bring the Lord to the center. And I think that's kind of our mission. Everyone who's involved online has to do so completely understanding the dangers of what they're doing when they're going into that space, and being very aware of it, but also being by bringing Christ into that moment. And I think the biggest thing, as you've pointed out, is division at the moment. It's not Catholic. The way that people talk about all of the drama happening in the life of the church, especially the way in which hierarchy is kind of treated, the whole culture of calling people out, that's not a Catholic position. Never has it been in the course of Catholic history. No one has understood themselves as having the right to call out, to call someone out, in the sense of, rather than going to them directly, just broadcasting it for everyone else to hear. It's, you know, the Lord himself gives us the instruction of what to do for fraternal correction, and that is go to the person directly. If they don't listen, then maybe get others and then write to them, you know, directly. If not, then you bring it to the church. We have a structure in place already. You know, the bishops and the cardinals are there. They're the brothers of the Pope. They're the ones who have been given the charge by divine authority to correct the Pope if something is astray. We can write to our bishops. We can write to those, the cardinals of our own country, imploring them to do that. That's perfectly charitable, and it's perfectly okay. But kind of monetizing division by jumping online and giving the hottest possible take is just leading people further away. And so many of my friends who have gone down have become sedevacantists. They've just left the faith altogether. You know, they've left the church, and they've gone Orthodox or whatever it happens to be, because they cannot tolerate anymore the cognitive dissonance of the mire, the cesspool of social media, and giving in to that constant temptation to division. So we have to be so aware of that and bring unity. We need to bring communion into that space.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I always tell people, we're the church, that we're the universal church. We're not the divisive church. Like, we're not division church.
Yeah.
And I think that's so important, especially when I see all of these people constantly ridiculing the Holy Father. And it's like, you know, yeah, but also, like, that's not the approach we should be taking. We still have to have, you know, respect for his position and authority. And, you know, no matter what, saying uncharitable things about anybody online is bad. But when outsiders see Catholics attacking their own leadership, I mean, that's not a good look either.
Yeah.
And so I think it's definitely important that we, you know, my spiritual director, he's fantastic. And he told me, do not post to create controversy. Mm. And that's something that I had to think about, because a lot of times on Twitter, you can post anything and it'll become controversial. But the intention behind it is what's important. Mm. And if you're intending for a tweet to become controversial and cause a big disruption and to become viral, because you know it's a hot button topic, you know it's going to get views, you know it's going to get comments. I have temptations like that all the time where I'm like, if I post this, I'm going to get so many views and retweets and everything. Yeah. And it's like, but that's not of God. You know, that is of our own selfish will, that we want to become more well known. Now, if a tweet of mine goes viral but my intention is not for it to go viral, and it still does anyways, that's different. But the issue is that people on those websites will try and read your heart, which is only something God can do. He can be the only one who judges your heart. So they're like, oh, you're being so prideful in this photo, or oh, you're being, and I'm like, no, I'm just trying to post for the ladies. Yeah. And I think that's really difficult too, is that you get judged by, your heart gets judged by people who clearly don't know you, which of course is a sin on their part. But we have to think before we post and really become more aware of the things we're talking about, and also know that there's like power in privacy. People share way too much online.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I absolutely agree with that. I think it's I think what you said about the don't post to be controversial is a very hard, because I have to question myself before I do things. Like I try to speak some kind of truth into divisive topics, and that is really, really difficult with comedy, because it's amazing how people respond to comedic videos, in the sense they'll not only look at it and say, oh yes, this is meant to be comedic, but then they'll read like really malicious malicious intent into the creation of the act. I think the biggest one, in fact, the biggest video I ever made was the Halloween one, where I very intentionally included the like the yoga book in that video, where I threw it in the trash. Now, there was a part of me that was like, My intention there was to use a yoga book in particular, because I know catechetically there are so many Catholics, there are so many kind of cultural Catholics that don't know anything about that there may be a conflict of interest with our faith in terms of practicing the spiritual aspects, even the physical aspects of yoga. And so this is something where I was like, I want people to know that there is an issue here. And so it did cause a lot of outrage, in the sense of I had, many Hindu people in the chat, a lot of others saying, there's nothing wrong at all with yoga. In fact, yoga is not spiritual whatsoever. But then the Hindu commenters would come in and say, absolutely it is. Yoga is a spiritual practice. You have no idea what you're talking about. And so it did create division, and it got to the point where I did, that was the only video I've ever turned the comments off. And the reason I turned the comments off is not because I hate liberty and I hate freedom, and I'm trying to overturn the First Amendment in the United States, but it's because it started to disrupt my peace. It was the only video where every single time I would open social media and I'd post something new, it was being overshadowed by the fact that I was getting hundreds and hundreds of comments a day on that video. And all of a sudden, it started bleeding into my spiritual life. During my prayer, during silence, it was starting to affect me. And I was starting to think about responses. How should I deal with this? Who should I respond to? And I just said, social media is not the principle of allowing this has now been overshadowed by its detriment to me in my spiritual life. So I turned that off on that particular video. Maybe one day when it cools down, I'll put them back for people to read. But just in that time, I had to say, well, what's my relationship with this beast that I'm dealing with, and how do I navigate this?
Yeah. And honestly, yoga is such a hot button topic that I'll post about it once in a while, because I will see Catholics, participating in this. Actually, some friends of mine will participate who are Catholic, and I you know, it's one of those things where it's like, do you call them out directly or do you address it in like a video or like something else because you know that other people are doing it? And the intention, again, isn't to create controversy, but it's to remind people that this is not compatible, you know, with Christianity or Catholicism. Because you go and ask a yogi, you know, who's a yoga master, basically, you tell them like, oh, I'm just doing, you know, this for fun. And what I'm talking about isn't like the stretches, some of the stretches necessarily. Like I do some of the stretches for exercising, like doing the splits, that's not yoga. You know, it's when you go to a class, it's when you say namaste, it's when you're doing these breathing techniques and you're talking about the snake in your spine. And all of that is very religious and very spiritual. When my friends go to these classes, I tell them, I'm like, you're opening yourself up to a demonic attack. And the issue though, is whenever I speak out about this, it's always usually pretty charitable. And I try to be like, hey, just so you know, it's always met with hostility, always. Like people are so quick to defend yoga. And I'm like, you know what else you could do that's not like, you know, another religion? Pilates. Whoa. Crazy. Yeah. You know, or just stretch. Why do you need to go to, I don't know. But the thing is that people, I notice when it comes to yoga, there is so much diabolical like stuff surrounding that people just like go for the jugular if you mention it.
Absolutely. And I think that actually shows the spiritual, there's almost a spiritual possession taking place. And that the fact that people act so quickly and so defensively, like you absolutely, you know, you can talk about anything, but do not touch yoga. Yep. It's like, it's almost as if it's become a bit of a golden calf for some people where it's like, oh, but this has helped me with my, you know, with my mental health and all of this. And I understand that there's aspects of the meditative practice that may have helped you, but exactly as you said, there's other ways of doing that. You can enter into Christian meditation. You can practice Pilates. You can do general stretching. You don't have to engage with this particular spirituality or this form of stretching, this form of exercise, which is replete with spiritual imagery. I mean, the whole thing has its own theology about the nature of the world. And it's an inherently anti-Christian kind of view of things, in the sense of it's about the destruction of the own ego and becoming, you know, one with the world. It has all of these kind of pantheistic overtones, which are just not compatible with our faith. And if you're reaching out to that for wellness, then you're putting your trust in something that's not God. And I just think, you know, while it's conceivable that someone can separate in their minds the elements that are Christian and not, I think for so many people in the day-to-day operation of things, it's not a critical view. And so there's too much danger where I think it's a point where the most pastoral response is just to say, do something else.
Exactly. And I think that's so important. And honestly, these days with what's going on, it doesn't surprise me that yoga is the one thing that people are always just so, they sink their nails into because they just want some peace. But it's like, we find true peace in God. We're not going to find true peace through stretches and breathing exercises. You know, if you don't have peace in your life, it's probably because there's a spiritual aspect missing in your life with God. And maybe that could be yoga. Who knows? Yeah. You never know. But I guess, you know, just to kind of wrap up here, because this has been such a good discussion, do you have any advice for any of those young kids out on the internet who might feel addicted, doomsday scrolling, overwhelmed with the amount of negativity they see online?
Absolutely. I think we're in the season of Advent now, and it's a time of waiting. It's a time of expectation. And in the homily that I gave last week, I spoke about how when Christ entered the world the first time, he did so on a silent night in a backwater town, unnoticed by anyone. It wasn't in a booming announcement. You know, the Lord comes to us in silence, and that is absolutely what we need more than anything else. We need time every day for silence and meditation. Without it, I think we are completely lost, because we are bombarded in a world of noise. In fact, back in 2017, and I recommend this book to everyone for spiritual reading, and that is The Power of Silence by Cardinal Robert Sarah. And I think it's called like Against the Dictatorship of Noise. And I've just got a quote here, actually, that I can read. He says, today, in a highly technological busy world, how can we find silence? Noise wearies us, and we get the feeling that silence has become an unreachable oasis. How many people are obliged to work in a chaos that distresses and dehumanizes them? Without noise, postmodern man falls into a dull, insistent uneasiness. He is accustomed to permanent background noise, which sickens yet reassures him. Without noise, man is feverish, lost. Noise gives him security like a drug on which he has become dependent. And I heard that and I was just like, oh my goodness, like how much truth is just in those few sentences. We are addicted to noise. We're addicted to constantly having something being blasted into our ears, all day, every day. The antidote to that is silence. Christ came into the world in silence. He comes into our heart in silence. If we don't have that, we cannot hear God. We cannot understand. We cannot recognize his voice. And for me as vocations director, this is like the advice I give to everybody is you need silence in your day. There's so many people who cannot work out their vocation, whether it's to marriage, priesthood, religious life, mission, because they don't have a moment where God can actually speak to them. And we're never going to overcome anxiety. We're never going to overcome depression and all these issues we have about our identity if we don't give the Lord the space to begin his work on us and to heal us. And so I think rather than giving, you know, specific prayer advice, my advice is just a period of silence every day. Start small and grow it as much as you are able to give to God. If it starts at 5 minutes, let it be 5 minutes. But the moment that you establish that routine, start stretching it and give as much time, as much silence to God as fits within the parameters of your vocation.
I love that. That's wonderful. And Father Ken Gerarsi, I believe his last name is, he wrote a book called Spiritual Warfare and Divine Mercy. And in it, he talks about silence and how you might end up discovering you prefer the silence over the noise once you start integrating it more.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But no, this has been wonderful. Thank you much, so much. Thank you so much for being here, Father Sam. I really appreciate it.
And thank you very much, Amber, for having me on. This has been a wonderful inaugural experience in the world of podcast interviews. So thank you for being such a gracious host and not roasting me online.
Don't worry. I love your stuff. And I'm so glad I could be the first one. Hopefully the first of many more podcasts to come, you know?
Very much, and wish me luck and pray for me, because today I'm going to drive back to my family home where I'm going to find John is Catholic and we're going to shoot a little skit together.
I can't wait to watch it. Oh my gosh, so exciting. Well, I will definitely pray for you and for your brother John. So fun. One more time, where can my listeners find you just before we click off?
So my main areas are Instagram and TikTok at just Father Sam French or FR Sam French, For Real Sam French, and YouTube. However, that's much smaller. My main kind of interaction is on Instagram and TikTok. So you can find me there, but also the podcast. If you want my more serious side, that is in my homilies, which are at the Average Shepherd, which you'll find on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all the others.
Wonderful. And I love your homily podcast, 10 out of 10. People have to go check it out. So, but yeah, with all that being said, I hope you guys enjoyed this podcast. Thank you again, Father Sam, and I'll talk to you guys in the next one. Bye, guys. Do you have questions or comments about today's episode? Email me at thereligioushippie@gmail.com or leave a voice message at anchor.fm/thereligioushippie. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Thanks for listening.
A quest is a search for something. And every week, the Quest podcast will show you how we know what we know through interviews with people that have incredible stories of dedication and perseverance. I'm your host, Todd Fisher. Join me in this thought-provoking and inspiring podcast of discovery. Find us anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Do you have questions or comments about today's episode? Email me at thereligioushippie@gmail.com or leave a voice message at anchor.fm/thereligioushippie. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Thanks for listening.